We are live and kicking with Giffa Dog and Spike. Here we go.
Oh.
Spike, and this is the DS-106 Good Spell. Fat Saint Splendidly Tins 2013 on the DS-106 Radio for Life. This will be one of 106 bullets from the blog post 106 published by the DS-106 Shrink at 106 AM on Tumblr at the end of the Headless 13 run of DS-106. Our hashtag is #106spell. This is Gospel Radio for the DS-106 Dog Generation. Mantras and Koans explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I'm John Johnson, and with me, as usual, is Mariana Funes. Good evening, Mariana.
Hello, good evening. How are you on this very lovely sunny day we've had in the whole of the UK?
Yeah, it's been great. And I've been, as you say, since we're in Britain, we've got to talk about the weather. And it's been lovely today.
Exactly.
There was thunderstorms promised for Scotland today and they didn't turn up. It's been sunshine all the way. I've had several layers of suntan cream on myself. So, good day. And we are happy and, well, actually slightly tired as well, but never mind.
Yes, yeah. Have you confessed that your wee walk was so long that you can't feel your legs anymore?
Yeah, well, that's more age, I think, than length, to tell you the truth. But, yeah. So today, this is episode 16, it's May the 23rd, and we're tackling a couple of bullets today, number 90. My computer posture has to change, but RSI has meant I have had to be more measured in my creating. So how is the RSI, Mariana?
It's funny, you know, when I was reading this earlier today, I've forgotten that it got so bad or so good, depending on one's perspective, that I actually could not use the computer because my arm had gone completely dead with repetitive strain thing. It was bad. It was very, very bad. And I have forgotten that towards the end of the Headless 13, and I had to start to be a bit more, more measured in my creating on the one hand, but also you had to be a bit more creative about how you did things because I wasn't able to use the keyboard. So I had to I started to record things and use sound a lot more because I couldn't do the, you know, not that anybody else would do this, but, you know, I might have been found before sitting, slouching on a sofa with a very bad posture playing Photoshop. I mean, not that we ever would recommend this to our million listeners, but, you know, I might have.
not recommended, but unfortunately we all do it.
And it was my Photoshop hand that you know, because I realized that, you know, when you're playing with things and you're not thinking, you're thinking about what you're making rather than your posture. And I just, you know, have one of my hands, my left hand, because I'm left-handed, just posed and ready to do what it's supposed to do. So it just froze. So that's what that one was about. And actually, I maybe need to think about, you know, something that is making me physically not so well. So maybe I do need to think about my posture and how much the S106 I do.
So that sort of feeds in very much to the next bullet number 91.
Yes.
Which is, yes, it's addictive, and the addiction is driven by whatever is lurking in your subconscious. A need to rescue, a need for approval, a need for perfection, a need to please, and a need to complete.
No points for you guessing which one was mine.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Actually,
all of the above.
No, not all of the above. But I mean, you know, I'm one of, well, and it takes one to know one. What was it? Let me just give me a minute. Give me a minute. I just finished my daily create and post it.
Yeah, well, that was as a bit late in turning up on Skype here today because of the daily create. Because half an hour ago,
you had to finish. You couldn't possibly stop.
Well, I just like to get things done and dusted, and I think I've managed okay. But I mean, I certainly don't feel a need for perfection. There was a nice daily create a couple of days ago, which was do a daily create badly. And I just dug out an old one, which is kind of like today's, which is look at the old ones and find a new one, because I have done some appalling things to images over the years in DS106. So
all that I think I intend, you know, I intended with this in terms of, you know, with the dramatic language was just really to say that often, you know, when we find ourselves with a compulsion to do something and not able to stop, you know, it's not always that healthy, and it's often driven by other unmet needs that have very little to do with the actual thing that you're doing. And that's what that list is about, really. And it'll be different for different people and for each of us, given, you know, where we are on a day, how we feel on a day, I think, as well. Some of this very human unmet needs that we have.
So I've got a wee bit of audio here from Alan.
Confessing to an addiction.
So let's see if it plays. And while it's playing, I'll try and get you another bit of audio from the interweb. Here we go.
My name is Alan, and I have an addiction. I'm addicted to creativity. I can't get enough of it. And there isn't really a good enough supply out there. I signed up for a MOOC, and it was just sitting in these sessions, listening to people talk, chatting in the background. And then I found DS106, and I saw the light. It was open. It was wide open. It challenged me to be creative. I didn't have to do everything. I could pick and choose what I wanted. And the people there, they responded. They made you attention. You get attention from people who aren't even in the class, who help you, who guide you. And it's just the richest community I've been a part of in any place on the internet. I've made more useful contacts for people who share a common interest in this creative space than through any other channel that I've ever done. And I've been on the internet for a pretty damn long time. DS106, it is more than for...
Can you hear me okay, Mariana?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, that's great. We can say that again. Right, so that was a wee bit of Alan starting to confess to the DS106 addiction, but eventually pushing the DS106 drug on many other people. I don't think he did a very good...
I don't think he sees the addiction as dysfunctional somehow.
I don't think he did a very good job of, you know, owning the problem.
In fact, he failed at step number one.
Yeah, 12 steps. The 12 steps. He's not going to make it. So, but this idea of this, you know, I need to rescue. I don't know what's the read to rescue.
You're thinking about, well, because often, I mean, I was having conversations with people about not DS-106 but something else. But you know, that what is it that drives people to, you know, because you often get help, you know, on the internet, and often strangers, that, you know, people who don't even know you, when you're in trouble, you know, that people who know you help you out. Well, it's understandable, but often, you know, the people, strangers you don't know, you know, that you don't know, help you. And I guess, you know, one does wonder, you know, what is it that drives us to do this? You know, I say it about myself, you know, why is it that I, you know, often pop up, you know, and I go, oh, somebody needs help, I'll go help them. You know, well, really, you know, there is something that we get from the helping, and that's what that's aiming to. You know, if you have a need to rescue and you manage to rescue somebody and they say, oh, lovely, thank you very much, you've just rescued me, you're so wonderful, you get something from it, so you do it more. And whilst that's okay, when you're aware of what you're doing, I do think that often, you know, or sometimes for people who maybe start new on this open online learning thing, they get maybe driven by, say, a desire to be popular, say, a desire to have more followers, say, a desire to be seen by the people, quotes, that may matter in their world. And actually, it can really affect negatively their other life. And there are many stories about that, but that's probably not a chirpy place to go.
No, so let's keep it a wee bit lighter, and we'll slide away from the rescuing to some of the other other points that you're thinking. A need for approval. Now,
I mentioned that just now briefly, yeah, in the context of being popular and, you know, acting.
It's like a need for approval is almost part of learning socially. It doesn't need to be a bad thing, I don't think.
No, I think all of these things are not bad or good. I think this is just a reality of what drives human beings. If we don't accept it, we're lying to ourselves. This is what drives us. The question is, how intentional, conscious is it, so that we can make choices along the way and say, no, you know, I'm not going to stay up until 4 o'clock in the morning so that I can, you know, do a Google Hangout with you just because I want you to like me. I'm going to say no. And it's, you know, the same things that play out in the context of work, and the context of, you know, anything in life, really. You know, it's not that it's good or bad in itself. It's, are we able to make choices that are supportive of our well-being, or are we doing something that isn't helping us? And you don't often get to find out sometimes until the negative effects kick in, I would say. Okay. It's often with stuff that we're not aware of, but that has the negative effect, because if we are aware of what's driving us and why we're doing what we're doing, then we do so much of it, we have the, you know, and we have our needs met, and then we move on and do something else to meet another set of needs. But you don't have to be driven to you know, constantly do things that sometimes you do not want to, and what tends to happen from a kind of, you know, life point of view, what tends to happen is you keep doing stuff you don't really want to do, and then become resentful for what you're doing, which isn't healthy or helpful. But in themselves, you know, some of the things that I'm talking about there are just basic human needs, you know, being accepted, being liked, having other people approve what you do, say, wow, wasn't that great, you know, we all like that.
Yeah, so certainly do, yeah. I usually find my wife keeps me in check on that one, because she just tells me I'm too much like a Labrador and want to please people all the time. So that can help, I guess, a critical friend.
A critical friend is always helpful. Yeah. It's like, enough already.
Yeah.
stop making daily creates at 5 o'clock in the morning.
You don't tell us I'm working. This is another wee piece of audio which I've just dragged down from the internet, and I think it's Rochelle and yourself talking about in the Headless 106 in about addiction.
I wouldn't put that one. I put that one in the show notes because it's quite long.
Oh, it's 2 minutes 16 seconds.
Oh, what have I put? Okay, go on. So
let's listen and see.
Clearly, I must have edited it.
Obviously, Marianne and I have carefully listened to this pre-show. Here we go. Maybe just pause that there. This is what comes of listening to Twitter, thinking you're smart enough to download a video that's tweeted and convert it into audio and play it without checking anything out. Eagerness to please, I guess. We there, Marianne? Hello, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, Marianne. Can you hear me?
We're having Skype gremlins today.
Yeah, but you're broadcasting at the moment, and I'm broadcasting, so we're both going out.
So we are all right then.
Yeah.
Yes, I that's why I didn't put it in the show notes, because I knew it was only music, the video. Oh, but you were so smart.
Yeah, well, not that smart. I say that's the addiction to the eagerness to please. I saw that tweet. Rochelle tweeted that. I didn't even read the tweet. I just thought that'll be the thing I'm looking for. I downloaded it and.
There is, let's just say to people, there is a conversation, a long conversation, because Rochelle and I, this is where all this idea of the addiction thing started for us in 2013. Clearly, it had started much earlier in 2011 for Alan and others, but there is a conversation, and we will put a link on the show notes for people to listen to Rochelle and I talking about the S106 as an addiction and so on. But that's a longer thing because we talked for quite a while. But I'm pretty sure that I have edited the conversation and it's up on the interwebs somewhere. So we will post that up for people.
Japs just sent me another one, which is 23 minutes long, so I'm probably not going to download that one. And it seems to be take that RSI, it's called.
That's the one I did when I couldn't do my thing, and I didn't even know, I didn't remember until just now when I couldn't type, I couldn't do anything, so I did a video to do my weekly summary.
So
it. Wonderful.
Back a wee bit down the Twitter stream. Rochelle saying the creativity dopamine wave, you never know when it's going to hit. And we've certainly talked about this before, and not as in the positive way, but in the way that social media can kind of be addictive, because you get a small spike of brain juice or something every time that you... see something or see your name or see a like or something like that. And but I think the creativity dopamine is probably slightly more positive. If you are getting some sort of positive feedback to making stuff, that sounds like a better thing to get addicted to than just somebody liking whatever you've said on Facebook or Instagram.
I think that, I know, with all these things, John, it's not about the in itself, the fact that, you know, we produce dopamine when we, you know, we're searching for something, we like to look for things and find them, right? So, and one of the things that happens is we produce dopamine when that happens, and we like the feeling. Well, it's all very normal, but I think part of what happens in our culture is that that then gets fed as a product, you know, so then it becomes dysfunctional because everything around us is saying, you know, go look for more, 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 more. And of course, then it stops being the healthy system. And because of the fact that our, you know, the brain juices, as you call them, I like that, our brain juices keep producing the stuff, you know, what we... That's where the addiction becomes unhealthy and problematic, because you are then looking for the feeling that it gives you rather than, you know, integrating the thing, whatever it is, creativity or not, into your daily life. It starts to run your life to the exclusion of everything else, and then it's not good. And the same is true with creativity, of course. I mean, there's, you can go way back with, you know, the story of Icarus, you know, where the idea that, you know, you fly, you know, you think that you're going for being creative and that, you know, you're flying towards the sun, you know, but if you fly high enough, you get burnt. And artists know this as a syndrome. And you need to find downtime as well as uptime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I feel fairly safe and protected from this by being easily distracted. That I'll go full on and something, but then, you know, something interesting will fly by the window and that's me. the thing that we're talking about is that, and this is, I think, coming from the interview from you were chatting with Rochelle, is that DS106 is set up to maximise this feeling.
Yes.
The feeling that, you know, we make something and, you know, we're excited about what it's going to be like and, you know, we have to make it better and get it all the rest of it. And, but again, I just think that's why it works as a learning space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make a learning space social, and obviously lots and lots of people are trying very hard to create what I would think of as learning spaces online.
Mm-hmm.
That are effective, that can work at distance, that can work inexpensively, you know, because we've quite a lot of people need educated in various ways. And something like this is going to be part of that if it's going to succeed. Because mm-hmm. you've got to get people engaged and you've got to maintain the engagement. So the thing we're talking about here as something that is something to be careful about is also the, you know, the driver for making this a successful course.
Well, but it's also the driver for, you know, when people are using gaming with young children to help them get engaged in the thing. Well, you know, you're talking about the same thing. It's the same process that you're getting them engaged in, and you're getting, you know, it's the same process. The question is, again, for me, always with this thing, is how thoughtful and intentional are you making it so that people understand that, you know, this is a process that can give you something really helpful and useful, and also something that you need to be able to manage, control, and stop. And that's where I think that sometimes we fall down. We don't make people aware that until they have a problem, we don't make people aware that these things are not always, you know, are not always all positive, that they have their downsides. Like the Icarus story, right?
Yeah, but I mean, do you think we've actually... I mean, it seems to me that most people that do DS106, the students and things, as you can see if you go back through a few years of blog posts and things on the DS106 site, most of the blogs, originating blogs, they've not kept up their hosting, they've not kept mm-hmm. up their domains, and they've drifted away quite happily after having an exciting course. I also think is the gaming comparison is that mostly where I've seen gaming used and I'm talking about school-aged children now, not adults, is that the gaming isn't directly what people are meant to be learning. You know, you're maybe meant to be learning something about the Titanic, so you make a model of the Titanic in Minecraft, for instance.
Yeah.
But what the learning outcomes for this should be is, you know, an increased knowledge of, you know, the shape, structure and whatever of the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
But in the DS106 type of course, where we're trying to get people socialised and a light addiction to making stuff, the outcomes of the course, the aims are to get people better at making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's digital storytelling. So it's like closer to the metal.
So yes, I think we're saying the same thing. It's not. It's about the process. Absolutely. And the point is that the process may well have its downsides and that it is helpful for us, certainly if we are in the context of as educators, for us to understand that the process may hook people in and may drive the interest and may do that, but it may also have its downsides. It's separate from the output and from the objectives and so on, yes, of course. But in a way, because of that, it's often hidden. And if you take the example of DS106, you know, we are meant to be learning about, you know, digital storytelling, about building our personal cyber infrastructure, and we do all of that. But thinking about the process, it's all about we go and find out, we go and learn, and we go and look for the tutorials, and we go and look for that. And I think the point that where the original conversation that Rochelle and I had, where it had started, was, you know, is some of this kind of constantly searching for more and more and more, is that not maybe, you know, something that you can overdo and that could become a negative thing because of the neurochemistry, which is what Rochelle was interested in, because it's activating certain things.
There's a quote here about the dopamine system not having satiety built into it.
Exactly.
So
you just keep going because you like the feeling, you know, you keep searching for more and more and more. I have to say that Alan has the Alan rule, which, you know, I always like, which is, you know, you're searching, and he says, you know, if you spend more than a half an hour searching like an idiot and you can't find something and you keep searching, then, you know, that's your point to stop and ask for help. Which, you know, to me, that's a sort of responsible thing to say, you know, that yes, searching is good and it's great fun and you love it when you find something. But there is a limit to how much you do it, and you find another way. And in our case, it's go and ask for help because somebody will help you.
Yeah.
And so it cuts that thing of I'm just going to compulsively keep searching for, you know, 4 hours and still not find the thing that I'm wanting.
Yeah. Or just keep trying yourself rather than relying on a tutorial.
Because I'm going to get it, and I'm not, well. There's another little dysfunctional thing, you know. And I don't need anybody to help me, and I'm going to do it myself. And I'm going to show them. No, it was me that I was talking about. It's the person sitting next to me I was talking about, not me.
Yeah, I think I've got that actually because I'm going to manage without Photoshop. Because fireworks is the best thing.
yes, you do that too.
Yeah, we like that. So one of the other things that came from that conversation is one from Michelle, is how do we use DS106 in our life beyond just fun, so that it's more than having a bag of Doritos at a party?
I thought that was brilliant. I thought it was a lovely thing to say.
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, her comparison being it's a great fun thing, and you're having, you know, you're having something naughty, you know, and full of fat, you know, and all of that. But, you know, it's all very fun. But then how do you use it? And the conversation did go on from both of us to talk about all the examples of how we have indeed used fun and, you know, and all of the kind of the stuff that we may have produced just as lighthearted, fun kind of thing that we have used in the context of our work and our professional life, as I'm sure you have, and there be many other examples, because everything that we learn in DS106 is directly applicable to, quotes, the rest of life.
Yeah, or, I mean, especially
addiction, may I say.
Sorry?
And like a heroin addiction.
Yeah.
It may not be applicable to the rest of life.
not always useful. But, yeah, I mean, this kind of struck two things. Is one, that I don't generally talk to people socially about DS-106, but I do talk to other people involved in education about DS-106 more, I think. Because I use it, you know, I think of it as part of my professional development, believe it or not, which may just show that I've got a rather casual and attitude to professional development, but I really think examining how people learn in social situations is, you know, is partly what my job is. So it's a very useful place to be, and I fairly regularly try other learning systems, especially online learning systems, but DS-106 is the one that just keeps on giving, and you see interesting things coming up, and I don't necessarily get that from other online courses. So I think there's something quite important to figure out.
Yes, I do. And it'll never be the one thing. I think there is a combination, isn't it? It's a combination of the actual people involved, a combination of the kind of design and how it's set up. And kind of, was it last week that we talked about Jim saying how it was just like the open web except with less trolls? And I think there is an element of that, you know, I think, again, Alan has written a lot about how, you know, DS-106 is not one thing. There are all these little projects, all this little thing, all these different little groupings that come together to make up DS-106. And so if you, and there have been people who kind of do come to the DS-106 because they want to find, you know, the thing that makes it, you know, and how they can learn, you know, do the DS-106 and then take it to wherever it is that their context might be, and they look for the one thing, you know, and I always find it quite amusing because I'm with Alan and others, you know, really it's not something that you necessarily can get a hold of and say, actually, this is the thing. We all have different views about what the magic ingredient is, don't we?
Yeah. I think it's worth kicking about and trying to fish it out myself, but never mind. Another nice quote that slipped into the show notes here is, if we are hooked in searching and not the quality of what we find, then maybe the tool is misshaping us. And it's this guy Claxton argues it become a society of articulate incompetence as we repeat rehearsed narratives but do not have the lived experience to back it up. And that strikes me as very true for lots of folk that I read on the internet. You know, they see usually some piece of semi-philosophical writing about a startup or something like that, and they apply it to, say, teaching and learning or living their life or whatever, and the zen of Trello becomes the way that they organise their childcare. I don't think that DS-106 is likely to fall into that trap, because it's just not that sort of thing. I don't think it's not. Do you know what I mean?
I was just waiting for you to finish. It's interesting about the idea of the articulate incompetent. You know, we talk about that, and Guy Claxton is a psychologist, and he's written some really interesting books. But we talk about that in the context of people being employed in organisations. How, you know, they kind of, it's almost as if, you know, they learn a way of talking that's supposed to mean success and leadership and, you know, all these big words that people like to use these days, but they have absolutely no idea. They just learn the right words for the occasion, and that's what he means when he talks about this idea of articulate incompetence. It's interesting that you pick that, because it's making me think about, it is true, of course, that one of the things in DS-106, when you take it probably, you know, beyond the just doing the odd daily create, you know, when you're kind of following through, like we did the Headless 13 and various others, where you've got a whole week and you've got assignments and you have, you know, a lot of work to do, really, you can't hide behind anything, really. So it's interesting noting this quote, because, of course, the idea of not having the lived experience can't really happen in DS-106, because I don't know that anybody would pay any attention to you if you spent a lot of time just talking about creativity and talking about the theory of, and, you know, blah, 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 but actually you make nothing. People ignore you.
Shows the money, or, you know, shows the stuff.
Shows the money, exactly. Now that's the title for this episode.
Show the money, shows the gifts, or shows the Doritos, maybe, perhaps, Michelle.
It's interesting. I hadn't really ever thought about that in this way, but when you said it, I thought, yes, of course, because the idea of not, you know, anything else that you go, any MOOC that you go and do, you know, you if you're learning a theory, or if you're talking about pedagogy, or if you're talking, you can just talk about, you know, and you can spend weeks, I'm sure, and people do, just talking about something that you actually don't even do, or don't have to show in the you can talk about what you do, but you're not showing what you do. Say if it's an educational thing. But in our case, it's not like that. Because in fact, we have to be convinced or persuaded to talk about what we do, because often it's much more about just produce the thing. And we, you know, and people like Alan and others, you know, at the beginning going, you know, you gotta write about your process. You gotta talk about how you did it, you know. So in fact, it's the opposite way of just learning to talk about something that you haven't done. You kind of have to do it and then talk about it, which I like.
Yeah.
So yes, I think that is a difference with other online experiences.
And that just to sort of might round up things, that there's a quote again in the show notes by Emily Yoff or Yoffe.
Yoffe, I would pronounce it.
Yoffe, okay. So Emily Yoffe says, she's talking about cats and making them chase around by flicking a laser pointer around the room. And any day it plays with a cat, you don't need a laser pointer. I've always found wee balls of tinfoil to be very good for this sort of stuff. The cat will, you know, keep chasing the ball, or the ungraspable dot of light, because of this dopamine hit, and they're getting really excited. And she's saying that no wild cat would indulge in such useless behaviour. I think that's kind of right and wrong. A couple of things strike me as well. Cats do this kind of behaviour. They do it when they're young and when they're learning. Mm-hmm. So they'll chase leaves, or they'll chase, you know, things, stuff like that. And what we've done when we domesticate cats, I think, and domesticate other animals, is make them stay young.
Yes.
And to a certain extent, human beings have done that to themselves as well. We're an animal that has a very extended childhood, that we can continue learning late into life, whereas most bears I've met, their character's set at the time they're three. this idea. So there's something interesting about this that's, to me, almost right, because it certainly reminds me of chasing a flickering laser pointer around the room endlessly, just sounds like making gifts, which can become, you know, this just continual play. But people are playful. People play football every week, and that's pretty much like chasing a laser pointer around the room. You know, if you go and play five sides, okay, it makes you fit, but the wee cat's getting fit as well. So we are kind of playful animals. And maybe it's not so bad to be doing this playful behaviour if we manage to do it in a way that learns something a wee bit or exercises our muscles or whatever, you know.
I think the point at which they're saying becomes unhealthy is when you do that to the exclusion of, in the case of the cat, to the exclusion. So, you know, you feed them because you buy them food that, you know, they don't have to go chasing anything. They have everything comfortable. Let's stay with the cat. So they don't actually have to go off and catch their own food and do any of that. So then all that's left for them is the mindless chasing as a mimic of what was the hunting behavior. And I think that the caveat, the warning is, are we creating a society that is turning us into that? Just a mimicking of what once was true creativity or what once was, you know, lived experience. And I would say that, you know, I'm not so quick to say no to that. I actually think there is a lot that we need to be inquiring into, thinking about in terms of how the our technology, our, you know, everything really that we create is done as a way of making our lives more comfortable, i.e. making us, infantilizing us, so we have to struggle less and less for some things. And I think that there are some not so pretty consequences to that, in terms of how able we are to function when those things are taken away, all the comfort is taken away. As indeed, you know, life, you just never know what life would throw your way. But the point I think they are making, this woman and others, is we are just not very good at dealing with discomfort, let's put it that way, because what we are creating is the equivalent of, you know, the cat chasing, going around in circles chasing the light, because actually it doesn't have to struggle for anything anymore because it's got its food in the kitchen.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like if your food's in the kitchen, then you need something to, you know, you need something to do. And there's a hole, probably too deep for me at the moment, but I just...
talking about these things and then you go, no, let's not do that now.
Yeah, it's like everything is train spotting, if you know what I mean. Are we just whaling our off, dear? Beckett, here we come. You know, the choice between doing something that amuses you and something that you feel makes you grow, for instance. Mm-hmm. Maybe just making you grow is amusing you in certain ways or for some people, yeah.
And sometimes, yes, but I think if you then start to seek only that which amuses you, I think then it's something that, you know, becomes problematic, because life isn't going to be like that. And when it isn't like that, you're not going to have the abilities to manage it, because you've made a life out of pursuing that which amuses you, because we can. In our, you know, high quality problem societies we've got, luckily, you know, and very grateful that we should be, but there are some, I think, long term consequences that we're not thinking about. But that's just me being a dystopian.
Yeah, so I'm just going, oh, there's a lot of cat videos with them chasing laser pointers on YouTube. I'm sure some of them might be giftable. That looks like a daily treat, create in the making to me. A meaningless cat gif, because there can't be many of those.
Anyhow,
this is quite a dark episode today, Mariana. When we come in out of the light and the bright sunshine. We're doing this, but yeah, you probably can hear the dog in the upstairs here starting to bark.
I can hear. That's not Gifa dog.
No, this is my neighbour's dogs, which seem to be quite loud tonight. Maybe that's giving us a sign. Is there anything else you want to run over before we?
I'm just just really to say, I don't think it is, it need be dark. And in fact, both when Rochelle have talked, you know, and I have talked about it, and when Alan was just, you know, talking about it in his video, you know, what we're really saying is there are some, you know, really positive, good consequences to, you know, and to finding something that you love doing so much that you will just keep on doing it. But the point, I suppose, is one of awareness that you can't just keep on doing it to the exclusion of everything else. And those of us who are lucky enough to be healthy mentally and physically, you know, healthy enough that we know that, well, you manage the thing that you're passionate about, and you do it for so long, and then you go and get something to eat and go for a wee walk. So in that sense, you know, it really is just about awareness, not necessarily something dark. But I think that we do have to think about the fact that there are many people who are not as lucky as we are, and who can use the tools and everything that the open web offers in ways that can send them into some really dark places. So I guess it's a both and, isn't it, as everything.
Okay.
Well, there
we
go.
There we go.
That's your dial of prayer for today. I'm shutting up now.
Okay, I think I'm going to go out with some more lighthearted dogs. Here we go.
The name is Colin. Colin the dog.
Your model. Still press here, do I?
G4Chrome, the camera of champions.
That's a Colin bark.
That's an appropriate thing before we go, the G4Chrome thing. Now, that's a place where we ended up staying until stupid o'clock doing things, and we worked around the clock for something that you'd go, well, it was just amusement, but we all had such fun. So there you go, something light, the G4Chrome story.
Learned so much from that. Anyway, I think what Colin was saying in his own special way was, DS106 for life.
For life.
With a little bit
of everybody.
Cheers, folks. Good night.